In the early morning hours of June 4th, 2022, Rachel Hansen, a 19-year-old beloved daughter, fiancé, and friend, called 911 to report that an unknown person had come into her apartment and shot her while she was sleeping. First responders rushed Rachel to the hospital, where she tragically passed away from a single gunshot wound. Investigators haven't identified a motive or a suspect, leaving Rachel's family desperate for answers. It's been almost 2 years since Rachel was killed, and investigators are still searching for the person responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. And each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever platform you use. Okay, so Rachel Hansen, I'm not going to spend too much time on this opening because this case is an absolute head scratcher. As I mentioned in the trailer, this case occurred in 2022. Not long ago. A lot of technology, a lot of science available, and yet here we are. Someone broke into her apartment. She was shot dead. She was able to call in her own incident, and yet we still don't know who's responsible. I've looked at this case. I've read some of the paperwork and the articles surrounding it, although there's not a ton out there because it's still relatively new. But from everything I've seen, just nobody really knows. Nobody has a clue what happened to Rachel, but that's not going to stop us. The reason why I'm covering it is because of that. Nobody knows what happened, and that's why we're covering it. I'm hoping that by exposing you to what happened to Rachel, you or someone you know will see this video or listen to this audio and decide to come forward, whether it was something you saw that could be connected or you have direct information. I'm hoping that by us going over this, that even if you don't know if you have information, something in this episode triggers something in you that causes you to come forward. Maybe we get lucky. We only need one good piece of evidence to maybe get that ball rolling and get some positive results in this investigation. So with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. Rachel Ann Hansen was born on June 12, 2002. When she was a toddler, her birth mother abandoned her and her younger sister. After that, they both went into foster care, which was a very traumatizing experience for Rachel. In early 2008, 5-year-old Rachel and her sister were fostered by a couple named Kim and Todd Hansen from Gilbert, Arizona. 3 months later, on May 14th, the Hansons officially adopted the sisters. This was a life-changing day for Rachel, and years later, she got the date tattooed on her arm in Roman numerals. On June 12, 2008, around a month after the adoption, Rachel celebrated her 6th birthday. It was around this time that she became really interested in horses. Wanting to support Rachel in every way possible, Kim and Todd got her a horse, and she absolutely loved it. Despite never taking riding lessons, Rachel was a natural. Kim later told the Gilbert Sun News, quote, "She had a gift. She was very good with horses. She never met a horse she couldn't get on." Not only was Rachel good with horses, being around them also helped her deal with the trauma she went through when her birth mother left and she went into foster care, and obviously, Kim and Todd were happy to see that their daughter was finally working through that trauma. Aside from her love of horses, Rachel was known for being incredibly caring, kind, and full of love. One friend said, quote, "It was hard to have a bad day around Rachel. She was the sweetest person and, no doubt, was a lot of people's best friend." Rachel also loved helping people and animals. She took part in many fundraisers to raise money for different causes. Kim told the Gilbert Sun News that at 10 years old, Rachel pulled a wagon around the neighborhood to ask neighbors for food to donate. Rachel also dreamed of owning a dog rescue one day, but until then, she and Kim helped foster dogs who were awaiting their forever homes. By the time Rachel was 14, she was teaching horse riding lessons, and when she wasn't doing that, she was active in sports like wrestling, soccer, and football. At only 16 years old, Rachel graduated from high school ahead of schedule. Then she started her own business where she trained, hauled, sold, and found horses for clients. She also rescued wild Mustangs from federal land and horses that had been abused by their owners. She was living her dream. By the spring of 2022, 19-year-old Rachel was ready to grow her business even further. ABC 15 reported that she obtained her real estate license so she could help clients find homes with room for livestock and horses. While this was all taking place, Rachel was also engaged to a man named Jomet, and they had plans for a fall wedding. However, things took a turn around May when Rachel's prize horse, Dash, was stolen from her property in Queen Creek, Arizona. Dash's theft was particularly upsetting because she was pregnant, something Rachel was very excited about. She immediately notified the police and began efforts to recover the horse. By the start of June, Dash was still missing. On June 2nd, Rachel moved into an apartment at 1900 South Coronado Road in Gilbert, Arizona. The apartment was conveniently located near Santan Village Parkway and Ray Road, just 3 miles from her parents' home. Rachel had actually lived in this apartment in 2021. However, in December of that year, she subleased it out. Then in late spring of 2022, she asked the current occupants if she could move back in, and they agreed. On Friday, June 3rd, Rachel's fiancé, Jomet, visited her at the apartment. They enjoyed dinner together, went to the apartment complex's pool, and watched a movie. Rachel's mom, Kim, later told ABC 15 that she spoke to Rachel on the phone at around 9 p.m. that night. Rachel seemed completely normal. She was happy about her new apartment and expressed feeling safer and happier being closer to home. Before getting off the phone, Kim told Rachel that she would come over on Sunday and help her unpack. They exchanged I love yous and then hung up. Kim had no idea they would never speak again. At around midnight, Jomet left Rachel's apartment because he had to be up early the next morning. This is the last time he would ever see her. Around 2 hours later, at 2 a.m., on what was now June 4th, Rachel called 911 and reported that a quote unknown person had entered her apartment while she was sleeping and shot her one time. According to the Gilbert Sun News, she had been on her back when she was shot. Due to this angle, the bullet entered her lower left abdomen and exited through her top right shoulder. After shooting Rachel, the gunman fled the scene. Rachel managed to get out of bed, grab her cell phone, and call 911. She then made her way to the bathroom, likely to try and attend to her wound. When first responders arrived, they found Rachel on the bathroom floor. She was rushed to the hospital where surgeons worked on her for 3 hours to try and save her life, but tragically, their efforts were in vain. Rachel was pronounced dead that morning, just 8 days before her 20th birthday. We're going to continue on with this case, but before we do, let's hear from this week's sponsor, Fume. Ever try to break a bad habit and feel like you're climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, I've been there too, but here's a breath of fresh air. It's Fume. And it's not about giving up, it's about switching up. Fume takes your bad habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit that much easier. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. Now for me, I've talked about it before. I love the design of this thing. The aesthetic is great. It's well balanced in my hand. It feels solid. And I'm someone, even if you're watching this episode on YouTube, I usually have a pen in my hand while I'm talking to you guys. And that's because I need it to stay focused. So the Fume is a nice supplement to that in my personal life. I like how it looks with all my other stuff. I have a lot of wood products or leather products. And so this pairs well with it. And like I said, you can just tell it's really well made. And then on top of the look, you also have the taste. And I have to tell you, it's much more flavorful than I thought it would be. And it just feels fresh. I've been mixing it up between the orange vanilla and the raspberry lemon. And the best way I can describe it is it's not as sweet as you would expect. It just feels very natural. And I really do enjoy that. So I'm really enjoying Fume. I think you will as well. So start the year off right with a good habit by going to tryfume.com/detective and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving my listeners and viewers of this show 10% off when you use my code detective to help make starting the good habit that much easier. One more time, that's tryfume.com/detective to get 10% off. And if you want to support me, make sure you support them. Now back to the case. Okay, so back at Rachel's apartment, the police worked to piece together the events leading up to her tragic death. According to the Gilbert Sun News, it was unclear how Rachel's killer entered the apartment. The front door was reportedly shut when police arrived, so they were unsure if it had been left unlocked or if the gunman had a key. Now, with that being said, I do want to mention that Rachel's parents have said that Rachel's apartment door had been kicked in. They also said that nothing appeared to have been stolen. But that's coming from them. Obviously, they're talking with police. So again, we have two different versions here. I want to make you aware of both. Now, the police did conduct a thorough search for surveillance cameras, but unfortunately, Rachel's apartment complex only had cameras installed in the common areas of the building, not in any hallways. This meant that the gunman had not been captured on video at all. And I have to stop real quick and just say that this is insane. I know there's no civil liability in this case. They don't have to do it. But I think at this point, especially with the world that we live in and how inexpensive security systems are at this point, you can get a pretty inexpensive system that would generically cover the hallway or at least the entry and exit doors of those hallways for a relatively reasonable price, especially with all the money you're making from the renters. So at this point, I almost think it should be a requirement for the safety and the insurance of the building that camera systems are installed in a way where if anyone enters or exits the building, they're captured at least for a few seconds on camera. I'm not saying every door, I'm not saying they have to be super high res, but there should be a requirement for the safety of the residents and for the insurance purposes of the building itself, where anyone who enters that building should be captured on camera at least for a few seconds. Now, although the lack of surveillance footage was a setback, the police interviewed Rachel's neighbors, but surprisingly, none of them reported hearing anything suspicious, including a gunshot. They also spoke with the people who had been subleasing Rachel's apartment just before she moved back in. However, it's unclear if this lead went anywhere. Now, there's two things to talk about there. First off, the neighbors not hearing anything. Depending on what type of caliber it was, and depending on the insulation between the buildings, between the apartments, and what type of drywall was used. I don't know if there's a certain code as far as soundproofing that needs to be in those buildings for, you know, so obviously there's not a transmission of sounds going from one apartment to the other. It is possible that with a low caliber weapon, they wouldn't have heard anything. Although it is surprising to me that if you're in your apartment and you're sleeping, you wouldn't hear a pop or something. However, I can also see a side where if you're sound asleep at 2 a.m. and there's this subtle bang, being in an apartment complex, I will say sometimes you become accustomed to those odd noises and those out of place sounds and you just kind of dismiss them. So that is also possible as well. All of it's very unfortunate. No surveillance footage, no witnesses. We're obviously not off to a good start. And as far as the people that were living in the apartment before Rachel moved back in, I'm going to save that till the end for my perspective. So yes, the witnesses at the apartment were a dead end, but the police continued interviewing people who knew Rachel in the hopes of figuring out a possible motive. But it wasn't easy. Rachel seemed to be universally loved by everyone who knew her. She had no known enemies or conflicts that would lead to someone wanting to hurt her, and she wasn't involved in any illegal activities. Because of this, it seemed unclear why anyone would want to hurt Rachel. Her murder was a shock to her loved ones and the community. Gilbert was considered a relatively safe area to live, and murders were a rare occurrence. In fact, Rachel's death marked only the second murder in Gilbert that year, The first occurred in January when a woman was fatally shot by her roommate. Rachel's friend Hayden told ABC 15 Arizona that she couldn't understand why someone would want to kill her. She said, quote, "Rachel was the most selfless, kind-hearted, sweet person. I was just in shock, and I'm still in shock, and I'm not quite ready to accept the fact that she's gone." Rachel's friend Cheyenne told Arizona Family that she was also shocked by Rachel's murder. She couldn't figure out why someone would want to kill such a sweet person. However, Cheyenne had a message for Rachel's killer. She said, quote, "She was 19. She had her whole life ahead of her, and you took it away. You didn't give her a chance to show everybody who she was and what she was capable of. You didn't give her the chance to grow as a person. You didn't even give her a chance to find out who she truly was. You took that from her. You took that from her in every way and shape and form, and it's not okay and it's not all right. She deserves justice." Obviously, as expected, people on social media speculated about what they thought had happened to Rachel, and some believed her murder was linked to the theft of her horse, Dash, which I mentioned earlier in this episode. One commenter said, quote, "She received threats from the persons who stole her horse. They had been harassing her over posts she made. She was selling her things because someone had stolen her horse and was demanding ransom to have it returned." Another commenter wrote, quote, "I feel it was the people that stole the horse and made many threats. They wanted ransom money and was threatening her from fake Facebooks. It's an ugly situation." Now, all that being said, it should be noted that the police have not confirmed any of the details mentioned in these comments. They have only said they are considering various motives and diligently pursuing all leads and tips. Now, as police continued their investigation, Rachel's loved ones were mourning her loss. Her fiancé, Joe Matt, moved in with the Hansons for 3 months because it helped him feel close to Rachel. Even after Joe Matt moved out, he still visited the Hansons for dinner almost every night. In late July, he spoke to 12 News about his grief, stating, quote, "Just getting through my days, just waking up every day not to see her by my side, that's all I woke up to every day. We were supposed to get married. I was supposed to spend my whole life with Rachel, and now I just have to live." Rachel's mom, Kim, also spoke to 12 News about the loss of her daughter. She said, quote, "I was absolutely in shock. Just really hard. I just miss her so much. She was such a huge part of my world. And it's just so very difficult not only missing her, but not understanding such a senseless act." Now, it is worth noting that Kim also mentioned that while police were following all leads, at this point, it looked like Rachel's murder and the theft of her horse were unrelated. Kim went on to reveal that Dash was found and was living with her now. She didn't provide any further details. Unfortunately, after that, there were few updates in Rachel's case over the following months. To memorialize Rachel, her parents got tattoos that reminded them of their beloved daughter. Todd's tattoo featured the Roman numerals for June 4th, 2022, representing the day of Rachel's death. Now, some of you may find that odd. I know when I first heard it, I was a little taken aback by it. Not a common practice that you see parents taking. But Todd did tell the Arizona Family that the tattoo doesn't bring hurtful memories to him. Instead, it brings a form of happiness because Rachel is with him everywhere he goes. Now, Kim's tattoo, on the other hand, featured a line from Rachel's favorite song, and it said, quote, "In oceans deep, my faith will stand." As another way to honor Rachel, Kim and Todd established a dog rescue called Rachel's Rescue, which is dedicated to caring for dogs, nursing them back to health, and finding them loving homes. The idea for the rescue stemmed from Rachel's passion for fostering puppies and her dream of starting her own rescue. For years, Rachel had asked Kim to partner with her to start the rescue, and initially Kim hesitated because she didn't want to handle the business side of things. She simply wanted to focus on caring for the dogs. However, after Rachel's passing, Kim decided to fulfill her daughter's dream. The rescue provides Todd and Kim with a positive outlet and a way for them to share Rachel's story. However, they have said that the only thing that will make living without Rachel even remotely bearable would be justice. Kim told Arizona Family, quote, "Nothing will obviously bring her back. That will never change. But it would be helpful for us in healing and bring some sort of closure in finding this person." In June of 2023, 1 year after Rachel was killed, detectives still have many unanswered questions. They haven't been able to come up with any motive for her murder or any potential suspects. Kim told the Gilbert Sun News that she and Todd met with the lead detective every couple of months. The detective always said they were working on the case. They would go down one rabbit hole and another lead would pop up. But that's all they could share with Kim and Todd at that time. Kim went on to state that the details of the investigation have been kept extremely private, with the police not sharing much with Rachel's family. Kim went on to explain that although she had seen Rachel's medical report from the hospital, she hadn't been allowed access to her daughter's police or autopsy report. The medical examiner's office said they couldn't release the autopsy report because the case was still open. The police also said the same thing about the police report. Now, this was obviously very upsetting to Rachel's family. If her murder was never solved, then they wouldn't have access to those reports. And Kim told the Gilbert Sun News, quote, "It's so disappointing and so frustrating as a parent going through this situation that the only people that we have to rely on to get information is the police, and they haven't given us any information." So I'll weigh in on this really quickly. I'm not going to sit here and debate or disregard Kim's feelings. I'm just going to come from the investigatory side. And I think most of you know by this point where I'm going to go with this. This is a really new case. And any information that they have, which from what we can tell on the outside is limited, they're not going to want to expose that to the public because it kind of takes away all their leverage. And I will say this, the police have met with Kim and Todd multiple times and haven't shared much with them. But from what you guys can see throughout this episode, Kim and Todd and, you know, other friends and family have been very open with the media, and the risk of telling them something and then having them relay that to an outlet is too much of a risk at this point. The detective's ultimate priority is to solve this case for Rachel. That's their client. That's who they're working for. Yes, they're also working for the family as well, but their number one responsibility is to Rachel and finding her killer. And they're not going to do anything to jeopardize that, even if the family doesn't agree with their approach. Now, in February of 2024, Kim spoke to the Gilbert Sun News and shared that she and Todd recently met with detectives and received disheartening news. She explained that basically the case is going to be inactive until someone speaks up or says something. The police have done everything they can possibly do. They've investigated all leads, only to come up with nothing. Kim also said that the police department's only option left was to reach out to Silent Witness and request that a reward be offered in the case. Thankfully, Silent Witness did agree to help, and they put up a reward of $2,000 and created a flyer with information about the case. An additional $5,000 was later added, bringing the total to $7,000. Todd and Kim expressed to the Gilbert Sun News that they were not hopeful about Rachel's case being solved. Todd admitted he hasn't been very optimistic from the start. He pointed out, quote, "There simply was very little evidence. I realized this. No gun, no witness, no cameras, no issues in her life that would point towards someone wanting her dead. Even the detective told us she is squeaky clean and was not into anything she should not have been." Kim, who had previously been hopeful, shared that her optimism had diminished as well. She said, quote, "We just have to resolve ourselves to the fact that we likely may never know who took Rachel's life." In February of 2024, Rachel's parents also spoke to ABC 15. When asked what they wanted to say to Rachel's killer, Todd shared that he had worked hard to keep hate out of his house since Rachel's murder. He mentioned that his house was still full of love and that the killer did not win. Todd added that the family is waiting for the killer to tell someone what happened, which will hopefully get back to the police. Todd said, quote, "If you've heard something, please, please talk. Please talk. We miss her badly. The world misses her badly." Now, while the Hansons await answers, they remain focused on Rachel's rescue. Kim told Arizona Family that sharing Rachel's story with people, especially with those who come to adopt, help keep her daughter's memory alive. She said, quote, "I know that she's watching over, and I feel her presence often, and I know that makes her happy." All right, let's dive into this perspective. We're going to go right through it. It's not going to be long, but I want to go over point by point. I have a couple theories that I want to discuss. But the first thing that I want to talk about is, I think, a very important piece of evidence that we don't know for sure. And that's the door. We've heard two sides of it. We've heard that potentially the door was shut when police arrived. They didn't say if it was broken in any way or if there was damage. They just said it was shut. And we know that Kim has come out and said publicly that the door had been kicked in. Now, it is possible that both stories are true. I've seen situations where I've kicked a door in during a search warrant and the door swings open and yet it still swings back and is able to shut. Maybe not super securely, but it's still able to shut because you might just pop that lock in a way where it pops open, but then it can still catch on the latch on its way back. That is possible. But the reason I bring this up is the door being kicked in is an extremely critical piece of evidence because, yes, I did say earlier that a gunshot may not have been heard by a potential neighbor because it would just be one minor pop. And again, depending on caliber, it may not have been that loud. It also could have been suppressed. We don't know. But a door being kicked in is not only going to be loud, it's going to shake the entire structure of that immediate area for not only that apartment, but the apartments around it. Trust me, if you kick a door, an apartment overnight, again, I don't know the proximity of these apartments. I'm assuming they're close. It's going to shake everyone's apartment, not just hers. And in my experience, whether I'm using a ram or a mule kick with my foot, it's going to take multiple kicks on that door to bust it open. Again, I don't know how strong the door is, but if it takes even one or two kicks, it's going to be extremely loud. It's going to wake up some people for sure. So it does raise some questions for me whether or not the door was actually kicked in. And that also plays into Jomette leaving that night. Without having the report, I would love to know if when Jomette left and it was around midnight, if Rachel was still awake or if she was sleeping and he slipped out of the bed and just kind of snuck out of the apartment. I'm assuming he had a key, so he would have been able to lock the door. It would be very easy for us to kind of come to a conclusion on that one if we knew for certain that Jomette locked the door and no one else had a key. Also, this is going to play into one of my theories that I'm going to save for the last theory because I think it's extremely relative, but I wanted to discuss the door because I think it's a critical piece of evidence. Police haven't came out publicly and said anything, but I would love to know if that door had actual damage because, again, if it had been kicked in, how the hell didn't anybody hear it? I don't think you have a situation where people are refusing to come forward out of fear. I just don't know. I just don't know how it could be possible where no one would have heard anything at 2 a.m. if somebody's taking the door off the hinges. But that being said, let's talk about the three theories. The first one, the idea that the horse is somehow connected to her murder. I don't see the connection. The horse has already been returned. I'm not in the horse dealing business, but I don't think this was a purebred or a thoroughbred that was worth millions of dollars. And even then, I don't know if that would justify killing someone for just talking crap online, but it doesn't seem like there's a connection. These people stole the horse. Somehow they got it back. I don't know if the police have been able to connect who's responsible for the theft of the horse or the horse was just, you know, left somewhere to be found. But either way, maybe with Rachel's death, that's why they returned the horse, saying, oh, you know what? This was about a horse, not about murder. We don't want to be connected to it. We're going to drop the horse off. Because if they were responsible for it and they killed Rachel intentionally for this horse, why would they return it after the fact? So for me, as Kim has said, it doesn't look like the Dash being stolen was the reason why Rachel was killed. I would be shocked if we later learned that was the motive behind this case. It's not impossible, but in my professional opinion, highly unlikely. Which brings me to my second theory, which is the stalker theory. And I know it's kind of a catch-all, but we've seen so many cases turn out that it was someone like this that I have to throw it in there. We don't know who was living in that apartment complex, who was living nearby that may have had a fascination with Rachel and understood that some of the time she was alone. And maybe it was a common occurrence for Jomette to leave late at night to get up for work the next morning or to go somewhere early the next morning. And they kind of learned that schedule. And so when Jomette left, they waited a couple hours and then they went into the apartment. The only issue with that is it seems like they went in there with the intent on killing her. And it wasn't really a form of sexual intent there because you normally will see that with it as well. Maybe there's some type of fascination with this person. They'll engage with them. And you would think that if that were the case, again, not having access to the 911 call, Rachel might have said something like that. It sounds like this person walked in and essentially, based if we were to believe what we have about ballistics, this person shot Rachel while she was potentially still in bed. We're talking about a bullet going through her abdomen and out through her shoulder, which is a really weird angle, if you think about it. Not a very common angle to see that. So she would almost be parallel to the shooter, where she would almost be around the same height, where if the shooter's standing at the end of her bed and they're shooting at her, that's the only angle where you could really see the bullet entering her stomach and coming out through her shoulder. The bullet entered her almost at a parallel angle, causing that exit wound to occur that way, and it would justify the entry and exit being the way they were. So it does sound like this person walked in, shot her, and fled the area. That was it. I don't know if there's more to it. Maybe if we had the 911 tape, I would feel differently. But this doesn't sound like a situation where if this was a stalker, that's the manner in which it would be carried out. A lot of the times, it's more personal. You'll see some level of struggle, some form of abuse. The death itself is normally more hands-on, potentially strangulation or a stabbing. It's much more involved. It's not just walking in and shooting her from the end of the bed and then taking off. Not impossible. This could be someone who has been watching her for a while and had been thinking about this, maybe had no real connection to her, and saw an opportunity when Jomet left and capitalized on that. But again, I'm putting this out there because it could be a potential reason why this case hasn't been solved, but I am not optimistic about this theory either. The final theory, which I feel is the most promising, is the idea that the previous tenants are somehow connected to this case. This, to me, sounds like a case of mistaken identity. I feel like this person went in there thinking they were going to kill one person and ended up shooting another person and may have realized that in that moment. And that's why they fled without, I hate to say this and sound insensitive, but without finishing her off. When they shot her in the stomach and it came out through her shoulder, more than likely they realized at that moment that the wound may have not been fatal. There's no way of telling for sure. If you're going in there to make sure that this person's dead, you're going to shoot them more than one time, potentially in the head or in the chest, to ensure that they do not survive their injuries. This whole thing is perplexing to me. And I don't know the dynamics or the relationships that the previous tenants had. We do know, based on what police have revealed to Kim and Todd, that Rachel's record, quote unquote, was squeaky clean. We don't know what the record or what the relationship or what the behavior was of the previous tenants. I'm not accusing them of anything, but without knowing who they were, what they were into, I can't clear them just from the surface. And I don't think that law enforcement has come out and cleared them either. Yes, they've spoken to them, but where did it lead them is what I really want to know. What were they involved in? Who were they associating with? Those are the questions that I have. Because this really sounds like a case where these individuals moved out, Rachel moved right in, and shortly after she moved in, again, she moved in early spring. She was killed in June. So we're talking only a few months, April, May for spring, and then she's killed in June. So could the gunman been under the impression that the previous tenants were still living there? I think that's very possible. But then the question becomes, how much research was this person really doing? How much of an axe to grind did they really have with these individuals if that was the case, where they wouldn't even confirm before carrying this out that they were still living there? So there's definitely a lot more questions than answers. But if you forced me to take a guess at what theory I thought was most plausible, it would definitely be the angle of a mistaken identity, for sure. Without a doubt, based on what we have here, based on what we know about Rachel, no enemies, nobody wanted to hurt her. It looks like this was a deliberate act where the intent was to kill this person. And yet, when the gunman goes in there, they shoot Rachel in a way that wouldn't automatically kill her. It sounds like in the middle of it, they had a change of heart. Well, why would they have a change of heart? Only reason I can think of, they realize it wasn't the person they were intending on shooting. And that's where I leave this case. I'm very frustrated by the fact that we don't have cameras. If we had surveillance footage, this case would more than likely already be solved or be a lot further in the process than it is right now. And I am a little perplexed that the police department came out so early and said they're no longer going to be working this case. And I did say in the episode that at this point, it's really new and they're not going to release a ton of information. But in the same breath, if they're no longer working it, I really do hope that they've consulted with outside agencies, including federal agencies, state agencies, and maybe even some private entities, some PIs who work in the area who may know some people who have previous law enforcement experience, to make sure that they've dotted all I's and crossed all T's and got the perspectives from people who may not be directly connected to the case to ensure that everything they've done is everything that can be done. Because I will tell you many times, people come in from the outside and look at what's already been conducted, what's already been investigated and say, well, what about this over here? Or what about this witness statement? Or did you compare these two? Or did you connect this person to this person and ask them this? It might be a small thing, but having a fresh set of eyes take a look at the investigation, as long as they're under some type of NDA and they realize they can't share any of that information, I don't see how it could hurt a case where they're telling the parents that they're no longer working it. But if that's all been done, it's going to come to one of you guys out there to help solve this case. So just to recap really quickly, at around 2 a.m. on June 4th, 2022, a gunman entered Rachel Hansen's apartment located at 1900 South Coronado Road in Gilbert, Arizona, and shot her once while she was sleeping. And anyone with information in Rachel's murder should leave an anonymous tip by calling Silent Witness at 480-WITNESS. And just remember, there is a $7,000 reward available. And one positive note that I didn't want to fail to mention, because I don't know how many of you know this, but I am a huge animal lover and donator. And we have a local shelter here in Rhode Island that I'm constantly mentioning on social media. It's the Hotel for Homeless Dogs. And what these people do for these animals is just incredible. And it was part of the reason I wanted to cover this case, knowing that this was something that was close to Rachel's heart. And I'm so happy to hear that Kim and Todd have taken on this huge responsibility. And although they have experienced the biggest nightmare parents can experience, they're turning their tragedy into something positive that can end up affecting a lot of animals and also a lot of families who are now going to have these puppies in their lives and will have a dramatic impact on their families for years to come. And so I definitely wanted to mention Rachel's rescue again and point out that the rescue has already helped over 200 puppies find homes. And if you want to check out Rachel's rescue, you can go over to rachelsrescue2022.com. I strongly recommend that you do. You will not regret it. And let them know that I sent you. That's going to do it for me, guys. Everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you next week.